I remember my friend Tim bought me Hunky Dory for my birthday when I was, gosh, I was about 12 or 13. And the track that really stuck out for me, which I guess was the first thing I'd heard, which was jazz, was Fill Your Heart. Fill your heart with love today, I don't play the game of time. And it really swung. Rick Wakeman playing these amazing kind of runs on it. And it had a kind of, it had a twist of vaudeville in it, but obviously somebody that was steeped in all sorts of styles, from vaudeville through to kind of, you know, Tin Pan Alley, early kind of almost post-Beatles pop music, into the weird sort of late 60s stuff when he was experimenting with mime troupes. And suddenly he came out with these three seminal albums, Space Oddity, Hunky Dory, and The Man Who Sold the World. And I absolutely submerged myself into them. And musically then I wasn't adept to be able to point at things, but there was an otherness about the sound of his harmonic structures which struck me. And the way his phrasing as well came from, well, you know, people talk about Anthony Newley as being one of his big influences. And I could, it was different, you know, it wasn't the kind of, you know, Mark Bolan was sounding American, really, as was Elton John. Elton John sounded like he was from a very particular part of Alabama, whereas Bowie had this almost, you know, urban sound to his delivery. And that album, Hunky Dory, which of course has, you know, one of the best songs ever written, although it was based on My Way, Life on Mars, with an incredible string arrangement, which I think was by Paul Buckmaster and Rick Wakeman playing those otherworldly chords. You know, I'd love to have been there for the moment where Bowie thought, right, I'm going to write a song now, because my entrance in the Eurovision Song Contest was turned down flat, so I'm going to just write this song. And out came Life on Mars, and that changed my life. Well, in the way that you know, Joni Mitchell talked about Jaco Pastorius entering her life as a bass player, you know, very much from the sort of jazz canon. And she described her previous bass players as their sound as running a white picket fence through her music. And when Aladdin Sane came along, which was this beautiful decadent sound mixed with very kind of metallic guitar sounds of that time, and in there, in the mix, was the amazing Mike Garson, who, just like taking away the picket fence, I think he put one back in. And his piano playing, which was based, you know, his love of Cecil Taylor and the kind of experimental New York scene, just sharded its way through all those things, and also pulled back, rhythmically pulled Bowie in a different direction, and made Bowie, because of where the piano sits in the mix, it made him sing falsetto more. And on the track Aladdin Sane, and an extraordinary thing called Lady Grinning Soul, you know, she'll come, she'll go. He'd never sung like that before. And with Mike Garson playing this rhapsodic, almost with Spanish guitar, it's just beautiful, beautiful sound. And Drive-In Saturday, what an extraordinary song. Weird, but very structured. His like a lot of jazz standards, his songs had beautiful pop structures, and even now they do. You know, even now they, late on the last two albums, you know, The Next Day and Black Star, still remain fairly structured if you listen to them carefully. Salzer and Schenker, the music analyst, would have had a field day with Bowie. Well, it's probably not a very jazzy thing to say, but I could, listening to David live for the first time, I thought it was Bowie playing the sax, and it wasn't. It was David Sanborn remaining in the within the spirit of David Bowie, because he wasn't really a very good sax player. But he just had a feel for everything he did, and he made it his own. His thumbprint was such that David Sanborn was able to play through those tours, you know, famously captured at the Tower Theatre in Philadelphia, 1975, I think it was 74. That famous cover of him looking like he's walking out of a grave, you know. So even way back then, 40 odd years ago, you know, his mortality was brutally stamped then. He spoke of death many, many times as well, you know, out of all the pop stars, he was the one that handled it. Him and Lou Reed handled the whole subject matter of mortality beautifully. My sister called me and said, "You've got to listen to, we've had no preamble to this. This was his last but one album." And she said, there's a song on there that is just begging for you to cover. And you know, cover, it's such a sort of weird thing to say, isn't it? We reinterpret songs as jazz musicians. But the story of it was so beautiful. It's such a just a lovely, lovely story about making a few wrong moves. And he's geographically set it in Berlin, which was, you know, that four-year period when he was re-establishing himself spiritually as well as chemically. And he wrote this incredible song called Where Are We Now, which I've recorded. And it's a love song. It's a love song. The last, you know, as long as there's wind, it goes through all the elements, as long as there's me, as long as there's you. And it's just such a positive love song. It's similar, to me, it sounds, it's got a very similar spirit to Tom Waits' Take It With Me. It's got that beautiful, innocent quality, but it does sound like you've got in a taxi and you're going through the streets of Berlin, you know, talking about Cardiff and Bosenbrücke. And just beautiful, beautiful song. Very typically Bowie in that, you know, and it has these uneven sections of it. So the intro is, you know, 7 bars long, I think, rather than the standard 8. So it was great. It's great to do it with the band. It's very, and the band immediately, my band immediately loved it. And yeah, it's on the, so we stuck it on the Theory of Joy.